God is calling us to trust the shepherd. Because the shepherd will not lead his sheep astray. The shepherd will not lead his sheep into a situation that the shepherd cannot bring them safely back out of.
Are you looking for meaning or a word from God that's relevant to your life? Are you searching for a better understanding of who God is? Well, you're in the right place. You found the Gary Talks About God podcast. This is a weekly podcast that comes to you from the pulpit of Red Bank Missionary Baptist Church in Germantown, North Carolina. The podcast is hosted by Red Bank Senior Pastor Gary Sanders. Now let's get ready to take that walk through God's Word with our pastor, teacher, and friend. Hey, he's that guy we call Gary.
Good morning. You have your Bibles, Genesis chapter 46. That's where we're going to be in just a moment. We left off last week with Joseph sending his brothers back to the land of Canaan to get his dad and all their other family members and bring them down to Egypt. And that this reunion is one that we've been waiting for 22 years as we have followed the narrative. And we're excited to see that in chapter 46, we'll finally see that reunion again with Joseph and his dad. When we get to chapter 46, though, and we see the reunion, it's easy to be focused on that and kind of miss some of the bigger picture that is going on in Genesis 46. Because up until this point, we've kind of followed the story, and sometimes when you read a story, you get so engrossed in the story, you don't step back and ask why, you know, what's going on, or you look at something and say, this doesn't make sense. I've been reading a series of novels. It's kind of a, I don't know that it's fan fiction, but it's kind of Sherlock Holmesy. It's an older guy is Sherlock Holmes, and Dr. Watson is played by his ward that he's taken care of. And I was reading the book the other night, and you know, you kind of get caught up in the story, and I got to the end, I was like, wait a minute, that didn't make sense. How did this tie in to this part of the story, and who was this person again that they were talking about? Sometimes you get so engrossed in the story, you don't ask the questions along the way. And as we're following this story of Joseph, and we're following the story of the famine, and we're following the story of God's movement, and we're following the story of God moving his people down to Egypt, it's really easy to stop and not ask the question, why in the world are they going to Egypt? What's going on? What's happening? And what we're going to discover through this, through a reiteration of God speaking to Jacob, and then through a beautiful metaphor at the end, is God is calling his people, and I'm going to go ahead and give you the outline now, but we'll go to it again. God is calling his people simply to believe in him and to trust him. And that's what we're going to see in Genesis chapter 46. So let's pick up the story, read it through, and we've got a wonderful lineage section again. I always love those when I get 70 Hebrew names that I get to read, and I'm sure you enjoy that as well. So let's read Genesis 46 and work our way through it this morning. So Israel, and remember, Jacob is Israel, and his name kind of changes back and forth throughout the story. So Israel took his journey with all that he had and came to Beersheba, and offered sacrifices to the God of his father, Isaac. And God spoke to Israel in visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, here I am. Then he said, I am the God of your father. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for there I will make you into a great nation. I myself will go down with you to Egypt, and I will also bring you up again, and Joseph's hand shall close your eyes. Then Jacob set out from Beersheba. The sons of Israel carried Jacob, their father, their little ones, and their wives in the wagons that Pharaoh had sent to carry him. They also took their livestock and their goods, which they had gained in the land of Canaan, and came into Egypt, Jacob and all his offspring with him, his sons and his sons' sons with him, his daughters and his sons' daughters, and all the offspring he brought with him into Egypt. Now these are the names of the descendants of Israel who came into Egypt. Jacob and his sons, Reuben, Jacob's firstborn, and the sons of Reuben, Hanok, Palu, Hezron, and Carmi. The sons of Simeon, Jemuel, Jamin, Ohad, Jachin, Sohar, and Shaul, the son of the Canaanite woman. The sons of Levi, Gershon, Kohath, and Merah. The sons of Judah, Er, Onan, Shelah, Perez, and Zerah. But Er and Onan died in the land of Canaan. And the sons of Perez were Hezron and Hamul. The sons of Issachar, Tola, Puva, Yab, and Shimron. The sons of Zebulun, Sarid, Elon, and Jahleel. The sons of Leah, whom she bore to Jacob in Padam Aram, together with his daughter Dinah. Altogether his sons and his daughters numbered 33. The sons of Gad, Siphion, Haggai, Shunah, Ezbon, Eri, Aradai, and Ariah. The sons of Asher, Imnah, Ishvi, Bera, with Sarah their sister, and the sons of Beriah, Heber, and Malachel. These are the sons of Zilpah, whom Laban gave to his daughter, and these she bore to Jacob, 16 persons. The sons of Rachel, Jacob's wife, Joseph and Benjamin, and to Joseph in the land of Egypt were born Manasseh and Ephraim, who Asenath, the daughter of Potipherah, the priest of On, bore to him. And the sons of Benjamin, Bela, Becher, Ashbel, Gera, Naaman, Aha, Rosh, Mupim, Humphim, and Ard. These are the sons of Rachel, who were born to Jacob, 14 persons in all. The son of Dan, Husham. The sons of Naphtali, Jazil, Guni, Jezer, and Shelem. These are the sons of Bilhah, who Laban gave to Rachel his daughter, and these she bore to Jacob, 7 persons in all. All the persons belonging to Jacob who came into Egypt, who were his own descendants, not including Jacob's sons' wives, were 66 persons in all. And the sons of Joseph, who were born to him in Egypt, were 2. All the persons of the house of Jacob who came into Egypt were 70. He had sent Judah ahead of him to Joseph to show the way before him in Goshen. And they came into the land of Goshen. And then Joseph prepared his chariot and went up to meet Israel, his father, in Goshen. He presented himself to him and fell on his neck and wept on his neck a good long while. Israel said to Joseph, "Now let me die, since I have seen your face and know that you are still alive." Joseph said to his brothers and to his father's household, "I will go up and tell Pharaoh, and you will say to him, 'My brothers and my father's household, who were in the land of Canaan, have come to me. And the men are shepherds, for they have been keepers of livestock, and they have brought their flocks and their herds and all that they have.' When Pharaoh calls you and says, 'What is your occupation?' you shall say, 'Your servants have been keepers of livestock from our youth even until now, both we and our fathers, in order that you may dwell in the land of Goshen. For every shepherd is an abomination to the Egyptians.'" So what is going on in this chapter? Well, I want you to just see 2 points I've already given you this morning, but to remind you that, one, God calls his people to believe in him. Okay, God calls his people to believe in him. On his way down, Jacob, who is also Israel, decides to make a stop in Beersheba. Now, this is one of those things where it's easy to overlook the prominence. There are several things that are happening in this chapter that's easy to overlook if we're not careful, and this is one of them. It's not that he just randomly stops in Beersheba. Beersheba is an important city in the story of Israel, the nation. This is where Abraham made a treaty with Abimelech. This is where Abraham plants the tamarisk tree that would remain and remind his descendants that this is the place where Abraham called on the name of the Lord. It is from Beersheba that the Lord calls Abraham to take Isaac up to Mount Moriah and sacrifice him. Beersheba is the place where God appears to Isaac and tells him 3 different times, "I am with you." And it is here at that altar that Jacob stops to worship. Isaac builds the altar. Jacob comes to worship. He wants to go see Joseph. He's ready to go. But before he leaves the land, as important as it is for him to see Joseph, it is more important for him to stop and to worship. And he makes a sacrifice. And it is after that he makes the sacrifice that God appears to him and speaks to him in a vision. And when you read this vision, you see that God is speaking to him as a loving father. It's a very tender vision that God gives to Israel. And God is telling him very clearly, believe in me. For as you read the verses and you read what's happening, God over and over and over says to Israel, I myself, I will. He is telling Israel, say, look, I need you to believe in me. And look at how he does this, right? First, he says, he reminds him. He says, look, I am the God of your father. It's an interesting designation, right? Why is he reminding him of this? Why does Israel need to be reminded? Well, quite simply, sometimes we just need to be reminded of a simple truth, right? And here God is reminding him, I am the God who appeared to Isaac at Beersheba. I am the God who spoke to Abraham. I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I am the same God. I've not gone anywhere, Jacob. I've not changed. I've not changed who I am, nor have I changed my plan. I want you to know that as you're leaving the land, that I have been faithful to you all these many years, and I will continue to be faithful to you, to what I have promised you. He appears to him and says, I am the God of your father, Isaac, and what is happening now is part of the continuity of my plan. Believe in me. He then goes on and kind of reassures him again. He says, do not be afraid to go down to Egypt. He tells him, hey, it's okay to go down to Egypt. Because thus far in our reading of Genesis and the stories, to go down to Egypt has not been an act of faith. Right? Abraham went down to Egypt out of fear. And when he gets there, we don't see Abraham's faith blossom into this stellar thing that we want to emulate. Instead, we see Abraham lying, telling, hey, tell everybody that you're my sister so they won't kill me and so that we can live. And we see his faith really disappear in retreat. For Isaac, Egypt was off limits. He was explicitly told, do not go to Egypt. And now all of a sudden, Jacob is traveling, and he's got to be wondering, do I really go to Egypt? Do I really go down here? And God reassures him and says, look, this is not an act of unbelief. Rather, it's going to be an act of great faith and belief in me. It's okay. Go down to Egypt. And then he continues. And now he starts and he goes back to the promises and tells him the promises again. He says, look, I will make you a great nation. God has repeated this promise over and over to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. I will make you a great nation. I will make you a great nation. And it would stand to reason, would it not, that in God making this promise to them and God saying, I'm going to give you this land, that the great nation would develop in the land that God had gave them, right? I mean, to me, that just kind of makes sense. And so Jacob has to be leaving the land with, we see 70 people going, we're not quite a great nation. Now there's more than they have been, right? We kept seeing Abraham have one kid, Isaac have two, and we're seeing all these small amounts, and finally we see 70 people, so we see the nucleus, but at the same time we're going, it's still not a great nation. And he's telling them to leave the land. So what is happening is God's plan is Israel is going to become a great nation outside the promised land. Israel is going to become a great nation in the pagan land of Egypt. And I'm sure that Jacob hears this with a mix of sorrow and expectation. Sorrow because he's lived in the land all his life, and now God is saying, hey, leave the land that I promised to give you, where I would make you a great nation, and go into Egypt, and there I will make you a great nation. So there's an expectation that this great nation, this Israel, is about to occur. But he has to remind them, I'm still going to do this, even though you're going down into Egypt. Believe in me. God continues. And then he tells them this, right? He says, I myself will go down with you to Egypt. I will be with you. God keeps making that promise over and over and over again. And he reminds Jacob right here that territorial boundaries does not restrain God in his work. Right? What happened back in the Old Testament was every nation and usually local cities would have their own god, little g, right? And their god was limited by the geography of the city or the nation. Their all-powerful God's power ended when they crossed an imaginary line. It would be kind of like if Germantown had their own little god, and Roll Hall had their own god, and King had their own god, and Walnut Cove had their own god, but our god and Germantown didn't have any power in Roll Hall because we crossed Highway 8. Or our god in Germantown had no power when we went too far down Highway 8 towards Walnut Cove because the Walnut Cove god started at that imaginary line and Germantown god stopped. God is telling Jacob that as the true God, my power knows no bounds. You may think that I'm limited to work in Canaan, Jacob, but I'm not. I can work in Egypt just as well. And when you go down to Egypt, I am going to be with you. You may be leaving the land that I promised, but you're not leaving me. Because I will be with you. I promise to never leave you, and I never will. And by the way, years later, hundreds of years later down the road, what we will see is that God in Egypt will display his glory and power for all of Egypt and their little g gods to see. God is going to be with Jacob, and by extension, his descendants and the great nation of Israel, even though they are in Egypt. And then God makes this promise. Look at, God is just all these wonderful promises. He says, I will also bring you up again. I will bring you up again. Now, we read that and we think, oh, he's going to go into Egypt and then he's going to come out. But what we find out is that he's going to die in Egypt. And he is brought back out of Egypt, but he's actually brought out of a coffin, out in a coffin. But the promise that God is making to him is he is affirming Jacob, or in this case, Israel, as the head of the nation. He's basically saying, I will bring you, Israel, the nation of, out of the land. I'm going to bring you back out of Egypt. Egypt is not the end of the story. The story of my working through the nation, through your descendants, does not end in Egypt. Because I am going to bring you out of Egypt. You're not going to dwell there forever. Believe in me, Jacob. And then finally, he makes to Jacob a very, very, I mean, just personal, beautiful promise. Look at what he says. Very end, he says, and Joseph's hand shall close your eyes. Even Jacob is told that he's going to die, but he's told that when you die, you will die with Joseph beside you. Joseph will be there. You are going to get to spend time with him, and you will be there with him in Egypt, and when you breathe your last, he is going to be right there with you when you do that. You're going to see Joseph again. It's going to be all right. Now, when you read that and you take it with the statements that Jacob has said, he keeps saying, you know, let me see Joseph and I'll die. Let me see Joseph and then I'll be happy and I will die. And in fact, when we read in that reunion, he sees Joseph and he says, now let me die. We would almost expect that he would see Joseph and then few days, a week, a month later, that he would die, right? You want to see something that just reveals the depths of God's love? Look at the end of chapter 47 for just a minute. Verse 28. It says, and Jacob lived in the land of Egypt 17 years. So the days of Jacob, the years of his life, were 147 years. That's another one of those verses that's really easy to miss as you read through the story. How old was Jacob, or how old was Joseph when he was taken away from Jacob? He was 17. And God's going to give him 17 more. He had Joseph 17 years as a child, and now he's going to have him 17 years as the prince of Egypt. That's one of those things in the Bible that you have to pay attention to, because it just points to the depth of God's love for his people. And at the same time, just points us to something that can only be done by God. And he says, you know what? Joseph is going to close your eyes. You're going to have some time with him. Believe in me. Believe in me. And then we get that narrative with all the names and the descendants. And what we see in verse 5 is they're called the descendants of Israel, the children of Israel. The first time that they're called that, up until this point, it's just been used a few times. Now it's going to be used over and over and over to refer to God's people. And he has this list of us. And sometimes we wonder, why do we have a list of names? Well, I think part of the reason we get this list is in a couple books later, when they come out, we can go back and compare. Did they all come out? They go down as 70, but they come back as a multitude. None are left in the land when they go to Egypt, and none will be left in Egypt when they go back into the land. They enter as 70, they leave as a multitude. And we read this section, and we read what God is saying to Israel, and my first thought is, what is God doing? Right? I mean, humanly speaking, God's plan doesn't make sense. God's plan all along has been to make them a great nation, to give them a land for them to be a blessing. And so I read this, and my first thought is, why then, God, are you going to send them into a different land? Why would you make them into a great nation in a land that is not their own? What is God doing? And we're going to explore that a little bit in more detail next week. So make sure you're here next week for that. But what I want you to see today is what God is actually telling them through what he said to Jacob. God kept saying to Jacob, believe in me, believe in me, believe in me. Although God has told them what he's going to do, and God's given them the plan, God's not telling them to believe in the plan. He's saying, believe in the one who has given you the plan. Believe in me, Jacob. Believe in what I have told you. And he's saying, just that simple belief. Right? When he spoke to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and all this time, did you notice how many times he told him that all these great promises, I'm going to make you a great nation and everything, but he never gives them the hows. Did you notice that? It's like he gives them, you remember the outlines you used to do in school? You had the big Roman numeral 1 and then Roman numeral 2, and that was your big points. And then you flushed out the outline with all the details. It's like God just gave them the big Roman numerals, but doesn't give them any of the details of how the big Roman numerals are going to happen. And I don't know about you, but man, I find that frustrating. It's hard when you know the plan, but you don't know the details. Especially these great promises that God is giving them. And so he's telling them and reaffirming or reiterating to Jacob right here, believe in me. Believe in me. I've led you this far. Believe in me. We'll read later from the prophet Habakkuk where he says, the righteous shall live by faith, by belief in God. We'll read it again in the New Testament. And so we have this reaffirmation of we've got to believe in God. We got to believe in Him. God calls His people to believe in Him and have that faith, to walk by that faith, right? The problem is sometimes walking by faith is, to be very frank, it's a pain in the rear. Right? I mean, let's just be honest. We're called to live by faith. And we understand that. But it is hard because we live by and large by sight, by what we see, by what we feel, by what we experience. And we read what's going on here, and God is telling them, making them all these promises. And by the way, you're going to go into Egypt. You're going to become a nation here. And all at the same time, we're going, but God, I can come up with a better plan. We can be a great nation in the land that you have given us, where people aren't going to slave us later, where we can prosper and be a great nation. Why don't we, God, do it my way instead of your way? It would be so much easier because I can see what's going on. Right? That's why we read Hebrews 11:1. Right? Faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. You know, last night. Last night is my least favorite night of the year. Right? I hate losing that hour of sleep. And then this morning, we all got up and we stumbled bleary-eyed out of bed, trying to make it into the kitchen to hit the extra strength coffee that we put on the night before. And every one of us got to the kitchen this morning with our eyes, how? Wide open. None of us tried by faith to walk from our bedrooms to our kitchens. We wanted to see where we're going, as bleary as it was. How to get there. That's not how faith works. Yes, we see where God is working. Yes, He gives us glimpses of this. But He calls us to believe in Him. The conviction of things not seen. Even though we cannot see God, even though we cannot see faith, we are called to have that conviction and faith in Him that is assured that whatever He calls us to do, whatever He tells us, however weird and strange the plan is, oh, we're going to become a great nation in Egypt, be enslaved for 400 years, and then come out? I myself will be with you, Jacob. Believe in me. So whatever it is He calls us to do, whether individually or collectively as a church. I know sometimes we look and go, but God, that's not how I would do it. And God, I think, just kind of laughs and go, well, I didn't ask you. But believe in me. I've not led you astray yet, and I will not. Simple faith and an assurance that God is going to do exactly what He has told them He will do. Simple belief that God is going to do in our lives and in the life of Red Bank what He has called us to do. We need to believe Him. But then lastly, God calls His people to trust Him. I know it's a little bit the same, but I want to show it to you in a little bit different light. Verse 28, the reunion finally happens. Jacob, his brother's family arrive. Joseph gets in his chariot and goes and rides out to meet him. I find it funny, though, in the meeting that Jacob sends Judah ahead of him. He's still Jacob, right? Jacob several times sends people ahead of him to meet people that he is going out to see. So he sends Judah ahead, but Joseph shows up, and he's in his chariot and all the splendor and the majesty of his position, and he presents himself there, and it says that Israel said to Joseph, I've seen you, I can die, and there they wept. And you would expect, as we read this, to get a lot of details about their reunion and a lot of information about what is happening, and oh, Dad, let me tell you, and oh, I can't believe you, and just all of this. And their reunion is one verse, and then it's like five verses of making sure Pharaoh knows that you're a shepherd. It's kind of weird. You know? What is it about this shepherd thing? And Joseph says, look, when you meet Pharaoh, he's extending you the offer to come here. And when he asks you what your occupation is, and it's like, is that the first question? You know, was that Pharaoh's first question when he met somebody? What do you do? I don't know what my first question would be if I was in that position of authority. I'm not sure it would be, what do you do? But there you have it. Joseph says, He's going to ask you, say to him, and Joseph tells them exactly what to say. Say that we've been shepherds and we've been keepers of the livestock our whole lives, and you know we've been this way since our youth, even now in our fathers. And so you're reading this and go, what's going on? Why is it so important that they are to be known as shepherds? Why does it end on this really weird sentence where it says, "For every shepherd is an abomination to the Egyptians"? And we start reading this and go, well, if nobody likes shepherds, God, then why is your chosen people shepherds? Why don't you pick a different profession for them? Nobody liked them. Shepherds were not, you know, if you were looking to move up in society, you didn't go befriend shepherds. Right? They slept out in the hills, they stunk, and the sheep stunk. You didn't have anything to do with them. Why shepherds? Does it strike anybody as odd that God's people are shepherds? It does me. I could think of other professions that they could be. They could be builders. They could be, you know, merchants. They could just, you know, he's God. He could just make them a bunch of kings and princes, right? Why shepherds? Let me ask you the same question a little bit differently. Why does Psalm 23 even make sense to us? Right? The Lord is my shepherd. Why does that speak to our hearts? Right? You go through and you read the Psalms, right? And there's so many affirmations of who God is. The Lord is my shield. The Lord is my strength. The Lord is my fortress. Those are all great truths. But if I looked at you and said, you know, the Lord is your fortress, okay. But then if I say the Lord is your shepherd, it speaks to our hearts in a little different manner. And as we read this and think about it, you know, God never does anything haphazardly. He never does. And in God calling them in this crazy plan, and God is showing them, and I think really teaching them through their own occupation, He's calling Israel to trust Him just as their sheep trust them. I know you're going to be in Egypt, but trust me. I know the plan looks really, really odd, but trust me. I know it looks like I'm not with you, but trust me. You may think that I have forgotten you, but trust me. You may think I don't care, but trust me. God is calling them to trust Him through the occupation that He has given them. And at the same time, He's preparing them and preparing us for a greater shepherd that would come. We go to John 10, and we read the passage in John 10, 11, where Jesus is speaking, and He says in John 10, 11, "I am the good shepherd." I am the good shepherd. And we read this verse and we see that we're called to trust the shepherd. And we're told why? Because we're told that the shepherd will lay down his life for the sheep. We're told the shepherd will protect his sheep, that the shepherd will feed his sheep, that the shepherd will care for us, that the shepherd knows us. So we're called to follow the good shepherd who will lead us. We're called just to trust Him. You know, the sheep have to trust their shepherd. They got to trust Him for food, for water, for security, everything. And God is calling and preparing His people and telling us that there is a shepherd that is coming that we need to trust. That He is going to be one who is going to lay down His life for you and for me. And when we do that, when He does that, and then we confess Him as our Lord and shepherd, He becomes our shepherd and we become His sheep. And we know that He's a good shepherd who loves and cares about His sheep. He loves and cares about you. And so we can trust Him at the same time and we can believe in Him. So when we go back to Psalm 23, we understand why that is so beautiful. We understand that Jesus will lead us to green pastures of still water. We understand Jesus will guide us in the paths of righteousness. that Jesus will comfort us and protect us in the valley of the shadow of death, that Jesus will prepare a table for us with such an abundance that our cup overflows, and that when we trust in Him, when He says, "No one comes to the Father except through me, believe in me," we can trust Him because as the Good Shepherd, He has laid down His life for His sheep so that Jesus, the Good Shepherd, can lead us into His presence to dwell in His house forever and ever. God is calling us to trust the Shepherd because the Shepherd will not lead His sheep astray. The Shepherd will not lead His sheep into a situation that the shepherd cannot bring them safely back out of. Genesis 46, God reminds us of two very simple truths that we say all the time, that we believe in Him and that we trust Him. And He's asking us, how deep is our belief and how strong is our trust?
You've been listening to the Gary Talks About God podcast. Are you looking for a church? Well, Red Bank Missionary Baptist Church is a community of believers who exist to glorify God and see transformed lives through the gospel of Jesus Christ. You can find us on the web at www.redbankmbc.com. Also, come visit us on Sunday at 8104 Red Bank Road in Germantown, North Carolina. Did you like this podcast? We put one out each and every week, so don't forget to subscribe. We hope this has been a blessing to you, and we thank you for listening.